Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
Good morning, I'm Carrie Miller. This is NPR News, and since it's Monday, it's time for the political junkie, Ken Rudin. Ken, welcome back. How are you today?
Good morning, Carrie. How are you?
How's February treating you out there on the East Coast? It's been kind of tough
us. Every time I get ready for your show, I always hear Phil Picardi give the weather, and it's 2 degrees below. I said, my goodness.
It's been tough.
Seasonally cold.
It's been tough. It's going up to 41 on Wednesday, and you know what that means around here. Break out the shorts. We're excited.
That's right. Suntan lotion.
How do you think this Monday morning looks to the president's chief of staff, John Kelly, Ken? Been a rough weekend, rough couple of days for him, I'd say.
It has been. And basically, it's, you know, we always talk about the gang that couldn't shoot straight. And John Kelly was the guy who was brought in after the ouster of Reince Priebus, basically to form some kind of order, some kind of semblance of order in the White House. And yet John Kelly is responsible, as anybody else is, for the conflicting stories we've gotten about Rob Porter and the apparent abuse he did to his two ex-wives. And until that photograph of one of his ex-wives with a black eye surfaced, I mean, the White House and John Kelly apparently, or allegedly, were talking about that Rob Porter is a good guy and he doesn't need to leave. And you know, it's just mere allegations. But of course, once you see a photograph like that, the minds change in a matter of seconds.
You know, Ken, I heard Leon Panetta, it might have been on All Things Considered a few days ago, who worked with Kelly when Panetta was head of the Department of Defense. And he said he really knows his stuff in the military, the politics. Panetta said, I'm seeing that the politics are difficult for him to figure out, that it's just so, there's so many, you know, traps and landmines to worry about going through the politics of the West Wing, and that he's struggling with that. What do you think?
I think that's true. I don't think anybody knows that better than Leon Panetta, who was also chief of staff as well after he left Congress from California. So I think Panetta really hit it on the head that John Kelly was very widely respected for everything he's done, but this may not be his bailiwick. And of course, President Trump has trotted out Kellyanne Conway over the weekend to say that the president still has strong support, maintains strong support for John Kelly. And he may certainly survive this, but he does seem like a fish out of water with this kind of defending things and talking about things that really were not his expertise.
There has been a lot of discussion about the lack of security clearance for the now departed Mr. Porter and others, including Jared Kushner, reportedly doesn't have security clearance. I'm seeing reporters who cover this in Washington saying this is highly unusual that you would not have clearance from the FBI for a year. Do you know anything about that, Ken, how long this usually takes?
No, I don't know, but it is interesting that reporters have asked about Porter's lack of security clearance. They knew about it a year ago, and the fact is, I mean, you know, a long time ago, and the fact that they've been asking the White House about this, what's going on with this, and it seems like the White House was caught flat-footed in responding to these kind of questions. So when everybody, it just seems odd that since reporters seem to know that something was amiss with Porter, and obviously a lot had to do with interviews that his ex-wives gave with the investigators, but if reporters had these questions and the White House didn't, that does fall on John Kelly.
Yeah.
And, you know, what did he know, and when did he know it, or what did he should have known?
Right.
And that's, again, a criticism of the way this White House is working or not working.
And by the way, why so many conflicting responses, right? It changed like hour to hour what Kelly was
Absolutely.
Saying about this.
Absolutely. Like Kelly supported him. No, he wanted him out. No, and Porter would say no. Kelly urged him to stay and fight. But other people say no, Kelly wanted him out. So there's such conflicts, and the White House really doesn't have its story straight. Chris Christie was interesting. He talked about he was on, I guess, ABC over the weekend,
yeah,
and said, "Look, we could have handled this better." And I think that's a at a minimum, that's exactly the truth.
The Political Junkie is with us. If you've just tuned in and you have a quick question for him, 651-227-6000, or you can tweet it in at Carrie NPR. This is the thing I'm curious about, Ken, with your experience in D.C. There have been a lot of departures from the West Wing of the White House. I mean, the president has lost a lot of staffers. And you hear national reporters talking about chaos. And I guess I would ask, yes, it might be chaotic behind the scenes. What are the implications of that for the average American citizen or voter? I mean, does that matter other than we're watching how this administration works and it's not working very well?
No, actually, that's a very fair question. I don't know if it matters. I don't think anybody says that, you know, how I'm going to vote in November is determined by the ins and outs of clientele and personnel in the White House. It is unusual. They've lost cabinet secretaries as well as chiefs of staff and others like that. But does it affect the everyday voter? Do people talk about, wow, this you know, White House doesn't have its act together? I don't know how influential, how important it is. Remember, I think of when Bill Clinton was trying to get an attorney general and he had two failures.
Huh, I remember that.
Kimball Wood was one of them. And,
right.
And then they had nanny issues and things like that before they settled on Janet Reno. Ultimately, I don't know what it matters, but those who follow these kind of things do say that this is a White House that that is filled with dysfunction. But again, if they can feel... The real story is that there are so many department secretaries and undersecretaries who have not been confirmed or let alone not even been nominated by the president. And that's what I think the biggest problem is, that so many jobs remain wide open and unfilled, and a lot of people are just not filling those positions right now.
I've been wondering how conservative Republicans, those who are elected to Congress and those who would like to be, are going to react to this budget that the president's going to release today, because that spending that Congress has done, what, $400 billion in spending, kind of makes the budget irrelevant, but it shows you where congressional Republicans are at right now.
That is a very good point. I mean, once upon a time, you know, the Republicans always attacked the Democrats as the party of tax and spend. When President Obama was in office, House Republicans worked out this sequester deal where basically they could not surpass certain amount of monies spent for defense or non-military spending because they want to show how they, you know, conservative they were. Now, once with the tax cut and the budget that was passed, I mean, balanced budgets, which Republicans used to live and die on, it's been thrown out the window. There is no fiscal restraint at all. And to talk about fiscally conservative Republicans, that's just a misnomer. That I think that the Republican Party said, well, you know, I mean, Paul Ryan used to talk about the fears of a deficit and what it means for our children and grandchildren. But nobody seems to care about that anymore. And when you talk about we heard in the newscast about this infrastructure plan,
right,
that they're talking about $1.5 trillion with $200 billion. Where does this money come from? And nobody seems to have answers, and nobody seems to be looking for answers either.
You know what this reminds me of, Ken, is back when George W. Bush was president, the last time a Republican was president, and there was so much criticism for the amount of spending that President Bush did, you know, on Medicare Part D and some of the other initiatives. And that's not even the size of the kind of spending that's going on now.
And one of the reasons that the Tea Party came to light is because of the excess spending in the Bush administration. So we always talked about how the Republicans were the party of fiscal responsibility. You would never know it, as I said, with the tax cut and the budget bill that was passed last week.
I wanted to ask you about a piece that E.J. Dion wrote in the Post last week, in which he talked about the hard luck of the moderate left. This is what he called it. He says, Democrats thus live in a less thankless world in which they have responsibility but no real power. If they accept less than a real loaf, they're trashed for not sticking to principle. If they turn down what they're offered, they're accused of obstruction. And this is going to be an issue with this immigration bill, isn't it?
Absolutely. And I think we saw that in the 8-hour speech that Nancy Pelosi gave on the House floor last Wednesday, that there are a lot of Democrats who said that, yes, we should stick. We Democrats should fight for our beliefs, that we should not agree or to any kind of budget deal that does not include the Dreamers. And then there are other Democrats who say, wait a second, am I going to stake my political career on, let's face it, people who are here in this country illegally? And so the Democrats, you always talk about the dysfunction in the Republican Party between the so-called establishment wing and the more conservative wing. Democrats are not united on anything. The fact that Nancy Pelosi, gave this speech, this emotional speech about the Dreamers on Wednesday, only to find 2 days later that 73 of her fellow Democrats voted for the bill, you know, to end the budget stalemate,
yeah.
Shows that the Democrats don't have their act together, and it also shows that they don't have any leverage, because it's nice to have an 8-hour speech, but ultimately, what did it mean? Not too much.
Well, Ken, what do you think happens as the Senate begins debate on an immigration bill?
I don't think anybody knows what's going to happen there. Because first of all, let's forget about what the House is going to do, because Paul Ryan says he's not going to agree to anything that the president doesn't agree to. But Mitch McConnell says, look, I promised you a bill on immigration. Let's open it up. There are no restrictions. Let's have a wide open process. I don't think anybody knows what's going to happen. And I mean, Jeff Flake, I saw the pro-immigration reform Republican from Arizona, said he's excited by the process, that he thinks he can get 65 to 70 senators agreeing on a bill. But my goodness, for Mitch McConnell to say, you know, let's open up this can of worms and let's see what happens. I don't think anybody knows what's going to happen.
Let's all remember what happened the last time the Senate got close. I passed a bill, right, a compromise bill, and then the House wanted to break it into pieces and pass it as separate bills.
And that's actually what the Democrats want now. They want a very narrow immigration bill, mostly to protect the Dreamers. But Trump and the Republicans say absolutely not. Anything that protects the Dreamers will also have to be accompanied by a huge amount of spending on border security, on so-called chain migration, things like that. So it's not going to be that simple. But again, it's going to be fascinating to watch. I mean, those who like the intricacies of what's going on in Washington, watch what's going to happen in the Senate this week, because really, unlike usual things that go on in Washington, nobody knows what's going to happen there.
Are you? Do you have a television in the studio that you talk to us from?
I do.
Do you have CNN on, because you're seeing the unveiling of the Obamas' portraits, official portraits?
No, I do not have.
You don't
it on,
see
no.
that.
Can I say something? When I talk to you, all my attention is focused on you. Okay, I can't get distracted.
All right, Ken. So, yeah, some more news about the unveiling of the official portraits for the Obamas. And, Ken, I'll talk to you next Monday. Okay?
Okay, see you, Gary.